an exponential number.
Exponential? I don't. I'm saying this off mic, but I don't think that's what exponential means.
Oh, I'm just Googling it. Hi, I'm Johan.
And I'm Samuel.
And you are listening to season 2 of the Value Parts podcast. We're so excited to be back. And we're even more excited to share what we're going to focus on this season. Specifically, we're going to be focusing on self-serve SaaS. And what do we mean by that? To me, it's a process that you have in place that doesn't require human beings in order for a sale to happen.
Except for one very important human being, or multiple.
Ah, yes, the user, of course. Right. Is that the human being you were talking about?
Well, or maybe it's a team or a company that you're selling to, or multiple stakeholders involved, I guess you could say, in the sale.
Right.
But the transaction is being automated on your side of things, which means that you need to have the right automations in place at the right times in order for that to succeed as often as possible.
It's surprisingly complicated getting a self-serve system off the ground. The conversation we believe in self-serve is still rudimentary. It's not super sophisticated. And that's something we want to change with this podcast. We want to pull all of these ideas into the light and talk about them in a little more detail. There shouldn't be any luck in a system that's designed to produce revenue. And unfortunately, self-serve founders are kind of fighting against the grain in this regard at the moment. They have to fight against luck in order to build out a playbook for themselves that makes self-serve sales possible. We want that to happen less.
We do indeed. We believe that founders should be focused on whatever their mission to put a dent in the universe is, not in trying to figure out how to make their primary business model function totally from scratch and reinventing the wheel time and time again there. When you focus on the patterns that people use, the different strategies and tactics, to us, there's a pretty clear playbook that companies could or should be following, but that playbook hasn't really been written and is not easily digestible. And it's our mission to get to the bottom of this and to create something that has repeatable, reliable tactics that you can employ to overcome growth plateaus and help your business succeed on its most fundamental levels.
Right. And we would love for you to join us on this roller coaster of a ride.
Yeah. So in order to even broach the subject, we thought that a good first episode would be talking about what makes self-serve SaaS so exciting to begin with. The branding of this podcast has a pretty checkered history, but we initially started the podcast about self-serve revenue, and then we wanted to make it a little bit more inclusive, and that's when we branded it as Value Paths instead. And now that we're back for season 2, we are focusing on self-serve again, just because we think that it is worth talking about and worth bringing to a wider audience, even if it is a more niche subject and more a concern of CEOs and executives and hopefully whatever sort of influence they have throughout their company, rather than a question of UX design or product management, even though that is actually how those tactics are carried out. Fair?
Yeah, that's totally fair. The ideas that we laid out in season 1, they could be applied to a number of different contexts within software. But self-serve, we believe, is a context that's particularly amenable to those ideas. And self-serve is a place where those ideas are desperately needed. It is the OG SaaS business model. But that being said, it's still in its infancy compared to how rapidly and exponentially the sales playbook has evolved ever since SaaS has been around. Wouldn't you say, Samuel, like there's a ton of sales things to do if you want to grow your revenue, but on the self-serve side of things, it's still pretty bare bones.
I don't know if I would say that I have seen it rapidly develop. I have not been a big participant in the sales world in SaaS over the last 10 or 20 years. So I can't really speak to that firsthand, but looking at the state that it's in today, I'm sure that there have been a lot of adaptations that have been made to a sales process. For example, if you're selling Ferraris or mops or widgets from a factory, like physical objects, I'm sure there are differences in how people are approaching the selling of physical goods versus software, but they seem like very similar processes to me from the outside. And from that standpoint, when we're talking about self-serve SaaS, one of the things that gets me really excited is that you're taking a digital offering with all of the unbounded constraints that that comes with, that you're not selling a physical object where if you're selling couches and you want to go from selling 1,000 couches a year to 10,000 couches a year, you got to be thinking about warehouses. You got to be thinking about how to order in bulk amounts and the costs that come with that, and looking at very narrow margins, but trying to make it up in volume, so on and so forth. But if you have a software offering, to go from selling 1,000 a year to 10,000 a year is nothing. It's light flowing through wires and bandwidth, and you are unconstrained by the limits of physical reality in so many ways. And to me, it's really exciting to think about how to take advantage of that. And then, as a natural consequence, to be able to manage your business where you're selling a digital native offering and have a digital native sales process to go along with it. To me, it's weird to have a digital native offering and have a physical reality native sales process, so to speak. Does that make sense to you, Johan?
Yeah, totally makes sense.
And yet, here, I'll just keep running with this. And yet, I think that within our industry, if people are going to quote unquote get serious about scaling their company and try to get hockey stick revenue growth, so on and so forth, most of the recommendations are to invest in sales, go up market, do an enterprise play. And I think that even when companies have some of their revenue coming from sales-driven customers or sales-won customers and some of their money coming from self-serve, the self-serve always feels a little bit like an afterthought and a little bit like it's treated like couch cushion money. But in a lot of companies, 50% of their revenue is coming from self-serve. And that would imply that it's probably a 9-to-1 ratio of self-serve customers to sales one. So that's a lot of couch cushions to be sitting through. That's a lot. And that's something mm-hmm. that I think if companies had a little bit more sophistication in how they were approaching the automated sales process that their product or their software has to provide, that there are ways to tune that so that in order to grow, it's not a question of get good at sales or die. I truly think that there are a lot of levers in place where a self-serve company can go from 1x to 10x to 1,000x and follow a relatively repeatable process.
What I think is particularly weird is that 50% of your revenue, if it's coming in from self-serve, and that's an unmanaged process. Just imagine what kind of revenue could be coming in if the process was managed and if it did get all of the time and attention that it needed in order to scale efficiently. I guess the super weird question to me is, if self-serve is so scalable, why aren't more founders actively scaling it?
Well, I think that takes it back to our original premise, which is that there just is no real, if an investor is pressuring you to grow your revenue at a more accelerated rate, they will probably say, here, there's a sales playbook that you can follow. You can hire a RevOps person. You can get a sales team. You can get a bunch of ADRs, whatever. SDRs, excuse me. I was trying to sound like I really knew what I was talking about there. And like, you can roll this out as a strategy that has proven over time to be pretty plug and play in terms of making money. And what we're saying is that even if we can't fully articulate that right now, we strongly suspect that there's some equivalent for companies that don't need humans to sell them and that in some senses can't have humans to sell them. One other aspect that is a big reason that I am so excited about self-serve SaaS is that there are a lot of companies where their market demands that it be purchased in a self-serve fashion. And that could be for a number of reasons. One being, of course, maybe that's just how the customer would prefer to facilitate the exchange. for whatever reason, in which case that would be pretty hard to argue against unless if you had a really compelling reason. Another consideration would be price point. If you're really successful selling something at $20 a month, that's a low ACV, and it's a lot lower than you're going to really be able to get any salesperson interested in selling for you, or that you're going to be able to make money compensating that salesperson to facilitate. And so you can either try to think of how you can charge more, which hashtag charge more, shout out Patrick McKenzie. I'm always in favor of that approach, but there are other levers that you can pull. And if you find that the problem that you're solving just isn't really worth more than 20 or 40 bucks a month, there's still a way to grow your business other than just basically resigning yourself to couch cushion money.
And when we talk about growth specifically, we have to differentiate between growing via acquisition. So keeping the self-serve system, the unmanaged self-serve system that you have in place as is, and just funneling more people through it, versus the growth that comes from refining that system so that you're acquiring the same number of users, but getting more revenue at the end of it because the system is more efficient.
Or just even being able to differentiate between which user groups are producing the healthiest long-term revenue for you or not, or where your expansion is working the best and where it's not. A million different questions along those lines, which we're very excited to cover at length over the span of this podcast's entirety. But for this episode specifically, is there another aspect that, if we're just talking about what gets us excited, what comes to mind for you?
I am very excited to dive into the economics of self-serve, because the fact that there isn't a human barrier standing between your product and the total addressable market. We've talked about how that means you can unlock scale really fast, but I would love to, in detail, talk about how that means that your unit economics are going to be great.
Tell me more.
Okay, so the two big aspects of unit economics, the cost to acquire a customer versus the amount that you can make from that customer over however long they're willing to stick around with you.
CAC to LTV ratio, generally speaking.
CAC to LTV ratio, exactly. Okay. Yeah. If we're using CAC to LTV ratio as a measure of unit economics, then self-serve has pretty great unit economics because you can keep your costs really low without a sales team, and you can put in automated processes for the entire customer journey that result in more lifetime revenue over time. So you've got levers on both sides of this unit economics equation at your disposal to make sure that for every dollar that you're putting into acquiring a user, you're getting a higher multiple back.
Yes. So what you're saying ultimately is, let me give you my takeaway. You're saying that without the overhead of a sales and CS team, that you're on a unit economics level, your margins are just inherently better, and therefore you can purchase more LTV at a lower CAC because you're not factoring a bunch of salaries into that.
Yes.
Or at least not the same amount of salaries for the same roles.
Yeah. You're putting an automated system. So really you're replacing two teams, like you said, the sales team and the CS team.
Mm. And you're going to have a design team either way. You're still going to be creating software that gets displayed to users and helps them do things. And that's one other aspect of it that I think is interesting to both of us, especially right now, is looking at companies that, let's say in a sales kind of context, there would be a sales process that you would seek to manage and refine. And you would also try to create what we could call a quality product within your software product side of the business. Mm-hmm. And the higher quality product and the more in-demand features that it has, the easier it is for your sales function to perform well, generally speaking. And so when we look at it in a self-serve context where there is no sales team to sell the quality product, a lot of founders, I'm under the impression, a lot of founders see their only lever being, it's like they're fighting with one hand tied behind their back, because they can do the quality product playbook, but they don't have the sales playbook to complement that, because there are no salespeople to manage, or very few, or however it shakes out at a given company. And what we're saying is that there are other levers that you can apply your design and product know-how toward other than just making more features and a theoretically higher quality product. Instead, directly manage your sales processes at scale, at self-serve scale, in similar but ultimately different ways than you would manage your sales process at sales one or enterprise scale.
And that's the scale part of it is the real challenge here, because when you have...
And opportunity. I know I'm interrupting you, but it's a challenge and an opportunity. Please continue. But I had to just shout out opportunity.
I was saying it's a challenge because when you have people involved in the mix here, the people interacting with the different kinds of customers that are coming to your product can take that one size fits all product and tailor it to them, even if just in conversation or a demo, to show them how it could work for them. That's what makes self-serve at scale so complicated, because you have to pay attention to the different kinds of customers that are coming to your product and the different kinds of evaluation processes they bring with them. And you have to account for the segments that are arriving at your door. A sales-led approach just seems to be the worst of both worlds, where you're...
Worst of both worlds? Are there scenarios where having a sales function is absolutely the right strategic call?
Yes. I think in an enterprise kind of setup where you're talking to massive companies and the sale can't happen without a handshake and a lot of work on their side and your side, in that case, you're looking at not just a sales team, but like a pre-sales team, an onboarding team, a customer training team. You're looking at a lot more than just a salesperson making a sale. What I meant by the worst of both worlds, though, was like, imagine a salesperson selling encyclopedias. There's no website that you have to design there. There's no designed experience that you have to account for.
I guess it would be the encyclopedias is what you designed.
With software, the object isn't the value. It's how well it enables you to get to the outcome that you're seeking that's the value. When I say sales-led is the worst of both worlds, you have to have this digital experience that ushers people to value. And you have to have someone actually ushering people to that value in order to make the sale happen. When ideally, it should just be the product itself that's able to unlock value for people and make the sale happen by itself.
Yeah. If you aren't designing processes that get users to value and that generate revenue for your business, what are you designing? Just like cool stuff?
Cool stuff that you hand over to a salesperson to make money off of.
So I guess in a sense, well, we're talking about a few different things here. There's that famous chart, I think it's from Christoph Jans, where there's like the scale of the companies and there's the whales in the top left. And then as you work your way down, it gets smaller to, I can't remember the exact order, but like deer and then mice and then flies.
Yeah.
In the mice and the flies section, which I think of as the vermin side of the
market. No offense to vermin.
Yeah. That's like, it's hard to make sales work in that kind of an environment that almost has to be a self-serve business model. And in a context where your company is primarily focused on selling to whales and elephants, like creating the software that makes stuff enticing to whales and going whale hunting is just a fundamentally different approach to, it's just a fundamentally different business model, really, than creating vermin-sized. We will need to workshop that terminology, but like the people that are on the smaller end of the scale in terms of ACV, whatever you might, however you might want to measure the worthiness of a customer, but specifically in terms of LTV, I guess you could say, the X and Y axis there are sliding the LTV numbers up and down as you go from whales to flies. And I think that there are a lot of opportunities to get more scientific about the mice and flies side of the equation I think that there's a lot of interesting aspects of that just purely from a business standpoint. One of those being that whale hunting is a pretty risky endeavor, and it's really, it's a high pressure kind of thing. I think of Wall Street sort of vibes, I guess you could say, when I look at that sort of approach. And a lot of times it can be built off of perception and narrative and charisma and relationships and a lot of things that don't really require that the software really be of the highest quality and really serve the user's needs whenever the users go to it for help. And in the case of selling to the lower ACV, lower LTV markets, it does keep you honest in a way from a design perspective, because you can't just kind of come up with cool ideas and then let sales smooth everything else out. You have a really, really tight feedback loop, an almost unescapable feedback loop of the design decisions that you're making on a strategic and a tactical level, and the revenue that's produced based off of people interacting with the consequences of those decisions. And to me, that's something that I like a lot. Whereas I wonder if, as an industry overall, that's seen more as being an intimidating kind of feedback loop rather than something to embrace and harness for growing your company.
It might be intimidating, especially when you can't hide behind charisma. But like you said, the opportunity is you get to statistical significance faster, you have a tighter feedback loop, and you're unlocking cash flow early because you don't have that cash flow trough that David Skok talks about. You remember the concept I'm referring to?
Yeah, I'm break down why it's less of a concern for self-serve though.
It's less of a concern for self-serve because if you've got your acquisition engine in place, there's nothing standing in between your converting those customers. You can unlock that cash flow immediately. You're not bogged down by a long sales process or by the number of salespeople that you have at your disposal.
It's like a question of your upfront investment, where if you want to go enterprise, you can't just go around with a pitch deck with like your vision for what the software will be. It has to at least be in sellable condition. And which means if the bar to actually closing a customer is $90,000 a month, you've got to invest a lot upfront to create software that you can plausibly sell at that number and to have a sophisticated sales process / brand or whatever in place to be able to make that happen.
Exactly.
Whereas with self-serve, everything's just faster and lighter in a way, or more lightweight, I guess you could say, where you don't need to invest as much upfront to get to that point where you can actually be getting real customers. And even though they are paying you less on an individual level, if you're really approaching this in a sophisticated way, you're recognizing that you might have smaller ACVs or LTVs, but you can and should and have to make up for it in volume if you're trying to serve a market at that particular price point that we're talking about. The way I like to think about it is, again, it's, to me, it's not a challenge and it's not an intimidating thing. It's a huge opportunity. I remember when the iPad came out, and this is not scientific knowledge. Maybe this is just me misremembering things. But when the iPad came out, that was similar to when Square started offering the sort of like ultra portable credit card reader cash registers that were based off of, you can just add the attachment to your iPad or your phone or whatever and start taking credit cards. And I, again, this is not, don't quote me on this, but just anecdotally speaking, I've seen a big rise in the little coffee shop carts that are in the middle of a parking lot, or all kinds of different ways of people who previously couldn't make money just operating in a cash business, suddenly being able to take credit cards payments without having all kinds of a giant merchant relationship or having the kind of volume that would make them interesting to a bank or something. And because of that, it takes a business that was previously too small to be feasible, and it opens up that possibility to a way broader number of businesses, of potential businesses. And so when we talk about like the self-serve the vermin market. We really got to change that name. When we talk about the lower end of the animal spectrum, what we're also talking about is, I guess, what you could call it in our technological world, innovation. We're talking about opening up new capabilities for a way wider set, a much bigger TAM of customers. And I think that a lot of the complexity and the struggle that comes with trying to scale your self-serve revenue is ultimately a question of how do you scale out operations to serve 500,000 customers instead of 5,000 customers.
Right.
To me, that's really ultimately a business strategy or business intelligence and design question. And where those two really meet each other are having that tight feedback loop to see which sort of automated experiences are really driving the most revenue in general. And then most specifically, which segments of your users, because if you're not getting 50 signups a week, you're getting 5,000 signups a week, you're going to be able to slice and dice that data so differently than if you were basically just having customer after customer trickle in a couple at a time per day or something like that. From that standpoint, you can really be a lot more, I think, discriminating about different subsets of your current potential customer pipeline, I guess you would call it in a self-serve context, signups, basically. Like, you can provide enhanced and much more, I think, considerate experiences for the kind of customers that mathematically are making you more money than others. And I think when we look at the video game world, like mobile games, microtransactions, they're just way, way ahead of where I see most B2B SaaS companies, even if that B2B SaaS company has a $40 price point.
Customer pipeline, I think, is a phrase that we should add to the vocabulary. And that's exactly the kind of thing I'm talking about when I say there's processes in place on the sales side of things. Like, you have a sales pipeline, but those equivalents don't exist in a self-serve context. But it does now. And one final point to put on this whole you can't hide behind charisma, and that's an opportunity thing, is that you're going to have to face this feedback loop of how well your design is able to provide value at some point or the other, because otherwise you're operating with a leaky bucket. You can only hide behind charisma for so long until that becomes a problem that you have to solve. So why not just face it head on and early?
Yeah, and build your charisma from that. You know, one other aspect of this is looking at the whole Clayton Christensen innovator's dilemma, disruption theory side of things, where if you start out serving mice and deer, and then you get attracted with going up market and you start whale hunting and build your company culture around that, it's going to be a lot easier for somebody to come in down market and start serving the mice and flies that you have ignored and moved on from and disrupt you from below, just the same way that Clayton Christensen talked about the rebar steel. And I think it was like disposable cameras or something like that, but similar concept where, like, right now, if you want to really get serious about scaling your revenue, the number one recommendation is to go up market. And I think that there are situations where there are good, honest, legitimate businesses that can be grown without doing that. And in some cases cannot be grown by doing that. And I'm really excited to see what we can do to help put something more appealing in place instead.
Absolutely. A last point to make while we're on the subject of the scale is that there seem to be very sophisticated processes on the elephant whale side of things and the fly mouse side of things. Especially, you brought up games before, and they've got microtransactions, and they've figured out that whole self-serve feedback loop and how to get the game to create revenue by itself.
Or, yeah, not to jump in, but or the viral growth school of thought that powers Twitter and LinkedIn and so on and so forth. And again, thinking of B2B SaaS companies or B2C SaaS companies that are not approaching user value in a scientific fashion or even necessarily revenue per customer in a scientific fashion, but are trying to like get people addicted to their product so that it goes viral. That's honey, that's not gonna work. That's not gonna be like, that's not where you should be putting your product dollars, you know?
Yeah. In those kind of contexts, it's not even the mice and the flies that are being revenue producers. The revenue is coming from other places. And it's like the mice and the flies are the products rather than the users.
Yeah, charging users has a real cooling effect on virality, I've noticed.
Right. But where I was going was, the deer section of this scale is unexplored territory. That's where a lot of B2B SaaS is at the moment before they go upmarket towards the whales. There's a lot to learn there from the way that gaming companies, for example, approach minnows and flies, especially because a lot of deers want to self-serve. It's weird to be talking about animals like this. But yeah, a lot of deers want to self-serve. And if, you know, you're a B2B SaaS, don't write off self-serve just because there isn't a playbook for it.
Yeah, you don't have to be enterprise or go viral. There is a really juicy and compelling opportunity in between those two.
Anything else that we've got to cover on the this is why self-serve is great topic?
I guess my last one would be a placeholder, which is that I'm excited to find out all the reasons that are not immediately apparent to me too. But that's sort of a BS answer. So to be honest, this covered everything that I was hoping to. And I would like to express how excited I am to dive further into this. And as a quick heads up, we've been busy creating content already in the can. So we will be rolling that out shortly. You'll be hearing us talk about our favorite concepts in self-serve SaaS, the things that we're learning, interviewing founders who have been through it themselves. Those are all ideas that we're interested in exploring.
Yeah, and we're going to be discussing all of these concepts actively at a small community that we're building called selfservesas.com. Join us there. You know, we're going to put resources in. We're going to be available. We're going to discuss each episode in that space. So outside of this podcast, if you're keen on being part of the discussion, that's the place to go at the moment.
What Johan said.
One last thing about self-serve SaaS. I think that in the way that they say you've got a user experience, whether you've actively designed a user experience, you've got self-service whether you've actively designed it or not. If it's possible to buy your product without interacting with a human, you've got some version of a self-serve system in place. And rather than treating that segment of your revenue as couch cushion money, it might be very interesting to look at it and treat it as a real growth lever that you can rely on.
I concur, and I am extremely excited to cover that in more depth for the rest of our lives, maybe.
Okay, so that's a wrap on episode 1. Keep fighting the good fight, and we'll see you next time.